You're attending this AIDS 2012 conference in Washington entitled Turning the Tide Together. That theme would suggest a new sense of optimism about overcoming this pandemic. Do you think that's justified?
Well, I think it's justified in the sense that we certainly have very good results with the people who are getting access to antiretroviral treatments. And we also have more and more people in developing countries getting that kind of access. Right now, about half of the people who need the treatment are getting access, which is much better than it was 10 years ago when we really started the push to bring antiretroviral treatment to the developing countries. At the same time, I think this title is a sign of people realizing that we can no longer work on HIV and AIDS in a silo kind of approach. And certainly, we can no longer see it simply as a medical situation. And so I hope that it will bring about a real sense of approaching HIV and AIDS in a teamwork fashion with many professions and also dealing with the social, the economic, and the spiritual issues and the emotional issues related to HIV and AIDS, as well as the medical issues.
Certainly there's going to be a huge number of participants there, apparently up to 30,000 experts, as well as a host of celebrities and philanthropists and so on. Does the conference set itself any real concrete goals, or is it just a chance to share information, best practice, and to keep the spotlight on this disease?
Yes, the conference organizers have set a number of goals, not just for the conference itself, but also for the future direction of Turning the Tide Together. First of all, they say they want to make the prevention revolution real. And then they want to work toward expanding testing and treatment. They'd like to make sure that key populations are receiving appropriate attention and funding, and they link together key populations of children as well as those who are vulnerable to infection because of their sexual behavior or because of their use of drugs, injecting drugs. And then they talk about turning the tide on TB and HIV, and this is one of those areas where in the past, they were treated as two separate diseases, and yet the fact is that most people with AIDS actually die of tuberculosis. And then finally, they talk about the need to achieve a cure for HIV.
You talk about making the prevention revolution real. What do you, or what does the conference understand by that, do you think? And what will be the focus of this part of the program?
Well, I think here, too, finally, it seems that some of the HIV specialists and activists realize that the previous approaches, especially taken in the north, the northern countries, in terms of prevention, have not been sufficient. And basically, those previous strategies have focused on the provision and distribution of condoms. And I think that some of the specialists, at least, realize that we need a much more integrated approach to HIV prevention, dealing with some of the social issues and economic issues that make people vulnerable to engage in behaviors that put them at risk of HIV infection, and also making sure that we have a real outreach to people in terms of helping them to be tested early and then to get access to treatment. And when people do have access to treatment, then they're less likely to spread the infection to even to sexual partners. So I think this is what they mean by the prevention revolution. I personally think that they're still missing the boat on some of this because they're not speaking enough about the need to really promote responsible behavior. And I think that until we begin to do that, we really will not be succeeding in the prevention field.
You're attending a two-day Catholic pre-conference, aren't you, from Friday to Sunday to talk about the church's approach to AIDS ministry. Tell us a bit about who will be there and what will be your goals at this pre-conference.
Yes, for many years now, we've convened a Catholic pre-conference in conjunction with the International AIDS Conference. And the reason for that is that we think it's very, very important for those people working in the field in Catholic Church-related programs to come together and to be able to reflect on the Church's teaching that's at the root of why we do this work in the field of HIV and AIDS and in many of the healthcare and the social services fields. And also then to support each other, to share our experiences, to talk about our challenges as well as our successes, and then to reflect and pray together as well. The big international conference is overwhelming. You mentioned that this time in Washington, they're expecting some 30,000 30,000 people. There are constant seminars and plenary sessions and abstract sessions going on. And so we want to give those who are coming from different parts of the world and working in Catholic Church programs a chance to spend a little time together, support each other, and to make networking connections with each other, because then they could follow up in talking with and communicating with each other after the pre-conference. And we've been very successful in doing this for several years now. We're expecting about 65 people to come to this Catholic pre-conference. We have a very interesting series of plenary sessions as well as workshops that we'll be making available to the participants.
One of the areas you'll be focusing on is the Church's response to the Prevention of Mother-to-Child Transmission program. How successful has that been?
Well, this is a goal that was set by UNAIDS and the U.S. government's program of PEPFAR, the President's Emergency Program for AIDS Relief. It's been quite successful in those areas where we could encourage pregnant women to be tested for HIV early and then to get them onto treatment if they're found to be infected. It's very successful in reducing the possibility of their spreading the infection to their child still in the womb or while the child is being born or after birth through breastfeeding. So it's been successful, but now UNAIDS has set this very ambitious goal, but I think a realistic goal, of being able to eliminate new HIV infection in children by the year 2015. And then the key also is to keep their mothers healthy and alive, because we don't want the situation where we prevent the child from being infected, but then the child loses the mother because of AIDS-related illnesses.
There are still a number of obstacles, though, aren't there, particularly in the rural, isolated areas where women have little access to clinics, where they're unable to access the information they need to be part of these programs?
Yes, definitely. And in fact, the Catholic HIV and AIDS Network just did a study of Catholic organizations that are engaged in the prevention of mother-to-child transmission programs and treatment for both mothers and children. And the respondents told us that the rural areas still have many challenges in trying to achieve these goals that have been set by the UN. And the challenges that they mentioned were lack of appropriate funding. They also talked about not being involved in helping to formulate the national plans, and they have a very unique perspective because they are in the rural areas and the governments need to hear about their experiences and their challenges. And also the fact that it's very hard for people living in rural areas to access healthcare facilities, a lack of transport. Sometimes people have to walk for 2 or 3 days to get to the nearest health facility, and then they get there and they're told, well, we're out of medicines now, and so you have to come back another time. Also, the lack of nutritional supplements. People on HIV treatment need to have additional food and good food, good nutritious food. And while many of the government and international agencies sponsor programs to fund the medicines themselves, not enough of them include nutritional supplement as part of the treatment.
This is also a gender issue, though, isn't it? And I see you're increasingly focusing on including men in trying to push these programs to prevent mother and child transmission.
Yes, another interesting finding from this study that we just did, and we'll be launching the report of the study during the Catholic pre-conference, was that the Catholic programs report taking a whole family approach to HIV treatment and prevention. And I'd say that that's somewhat different from many other programs where there may be a strong focus on women and women empowerment, but they try to take women out of the picture of the family itself. And so through this family focus, a number of Catholic organizations have begun to promote involvement of men, even in the prevention of mother-to-child transmission programs. And so Catholic Relief Services and Catholic Medical Mission Board are two agencies that have taken a real leadership in this new model in Africa especially. And then the Catholic HIV and AIDS Office in Papua New Guinea has taken a similar approach and has been written up by UNICEF as the best practice in this field. And essentially, they try to encourage couples to be tested together so that both husband and wife will find out about their HIV status together and then see this as a family problem, not only of a problem of the man or of the woman. And also together, they can acknowledge and follow up on their responsibility to keep the child from being infected and to keep the mothers healthy so that the child will have a mother alive and taking care of that child. One very interesting model that was developed in Africa, in Zambia, and in Kenya was that if a woman comes alone to the antenatal clinic, then she's really encouraged to get her husband to come on the second visit. And she's helped to write a kind of love letter to her husband, explaining to him how important it is to her and to the whole family that he be part of this process. And that has attracted some of the men to come and be much more active in the prevention of mother-to-child transmission programs.
You mentioned earlier the whole question of funding, and there is a real concern, isn't there, that in the current economic climate, there may be a lot more cutbacks to what is no longer seen as an emergency in the way it was perhaps a decade or two ago. How much of this is a real concern to you and the programs you're involved in?
This is a very serious concern. Last year, in conjunction with the United Nations high-level meeting on AIDS that was held at UN headquarters in New York, in preparation for that meeting, the Catholic HIV and AIDS Network did a study of the impact of funding cutbacks and flatlining on our Catholic programs. And once again, we had reports from a number of Catholic programs, especially those working in the developing countries, that already they had seen that impact, that funding was less available for treatment programs, or it might be available for the medicines, but not the auxiliary services that are necessary, the social support, economic support, the nutritional support. And also we had some reporting to us that when a whole family was affected by HIV, mother, father, and children, they were told you have to select one member of the family to go on treatment. Well, in most developing countries, and especially in Africa, people don't select one member of the family to benefit from something. And so we already knew that there were families who were then sharing their medications, which meant that they would have much less benefits because they weren't getting the appropriate dosaging.
Finally, this conference is returning to Washington after 25 years. It hasn't been held in the US since 1987. How important or how significant do you think this is, and how important is the American model or American money in the fight against AIDS today?
Well, I think the fact that the conference has returned to the United States is very significant for many people in the United States, and especially for those who have been involved in responding to AIDS in the U.S. and then later throughout the world for the past 30 years. The fact was that the conference was not held for the last 25 years in the U.S. because of the discriminatory policies of the United States government in allowing people living with HIV to get temporary visas to enter the United States, even just for an AIDS conference. A couple of years ago, the U.S. government withdrew those requirements and those restrictions, and so that's why the International AIDS Society and other organizers of this conference have decided that they would accept an invitation to come back to the United States. Significant for the U.S. I think in terms of how significant the U.S. response is throughout the world, certainly the PEPFAR program that was started under the Bush administration and is now has been continued in some forms by the Obama administration have helped many, many people in the poorer countries get access to treatments and to testing and to comprehensive prevention programming, including programming that emphasizes responsible behavior. And that's very, very important. It's also been important to faith-based organizations because it's been easier for faith-based organizations to access that PEPFAR funding than it has been for them to access some other government funding from other governments in Europe and elsewhere in the world. And also it's been easier to access PEPFAR funding than the Global Fund grants for faith-based organizations. So that's been very significant. At the same time, I think there are many, many significant lessons that have been developed in the developing world world that could be used very well in the so-called resource-rich world or the northern countries. And I think we need to be much more open to learn from those experiences, those community-based, those family-centered programs that have been developed by many churches in Africa and Asia and Latin America that have not been implemented very well in the northern countries.